And good afternoon. My name is Shauna Strausser, and today is Thursday, June 6th. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. We have a great show lined up in store for you today. We'll hear from the Juno World, the Fair Councils, today. There's got a presentation by Governor Sean Parnell this evening. We'll also hear from belly dance and burlesque dance instructor Dolphina, and we'll get a preview of Friday's slideshow about a trip south. And of course, as in every Thursday, we'll hear from Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Before we dive right into it with the World Affairs Council, let's hear Thursday's edition of National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Child welfare is the topic for tribes gathered in Portland, Oregon this week. A series of summer trainings are being held to address the issue. Toby Scott has more.
The series of six summer workshops are part of an annual training program organized by the National Indian Child Welfare Association. They're designed to inform tribal child welfare leaders of best practices in Native child welfare management, as well as techniques to encourage culturally specific parenting. Dr. Sarah Kostelik is deputy director of the NICWA.
We definitely think about language. We think about traditional child rearing practices from different tribal communities across the country. And we encourage tribes to think specifically about their own culture and tradition and how families really worked together in formal and in informal ways in community to ensure the well-being of children.
The workshops are being held as the U.S. Supreme Court considers a case showing the complexities of the Indian Child Welfare Act. That case, Adoptive Couple versus Baby Girl, involves a Cherokee father and the mother's planned adoption of their daughter to a South Carolina couple. Tribes and Native organizations are closely watching to see how future Indian child welfare issues may be impacted. In September, the NICWA will offer a series of courses addressing issues raised by the case and other pressing legal topics in tribal child welfare management. For National Native News, I'm Toby Scott.
The Thompson Ridge fire burning in northern New Mexico is a threat to multiple cultural sites. As KUNM's Carrie Young reports, the fire, as of Thursday morning, was 19 square miles and 5% contained.
Officials say the increased activity came as a surprise to firefighters Tuesday night, pushing the blaze eastward towards the preserve's ranch headquarters. The fire also threatened Redondo Peak, a site considered to be sacred by multiple Native American tribes. However, Valles Caldera spokesman Terry McDermott says firefighters were able to protect most of the culturally sensitive areas.
Redondo Peak is a very important shrine to many, many tribes in the area and has been for several thousand years. I think the best way to put it is that this is their church, but we are at the mercy of the wind and the fire.
Crews have made significant progress containing the Tres Lagunas fire, also burning in New Mexico. Some evacuees are now being allowed to return home as fire crews strengthen containment lines and rain moves into the area. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young in Albuquerque.
The Osage Nation is opposing the location of a new wind farm in Oklahoma. As KGOU's Kirk Gortney reports, the tribe's concerned about the safety of bald eagles near the site.
The developer of the project, Wind Capital Group, has applied for federal bald eagle take permits in order to avoid paying large fines if the birds are killed by wind turbines. The Osage Nation has fought the construction of the wind farm because of its location on traditional tribal hunting lands. Assistant Principal Chief Scott Bighorse says the company has had little official contact with the tribe. He says it would have been better if Wind Capital had come to the Osage Nation at the start of the project in 2007. A senior manager for the company says construction will start soon. Tribal members aren't the only people concerned with the location of the wind farm. The executive director of the Sutton Avian Research Center in Oklahoma also opposes the project because of its proximity to the Eagles hunting range. Wind Capital Group has not directly commented on the Eagle Take permit application. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
An Arizona road that leads to the Grand Canyon Skywalk is closed. The Clear Bridge is a popular tourist attraction owned by the Hualapai tribe. The news agency AZ Central reports ranch owner Nigel Turner has blocked the road. Visitors reach the west rim of the Grand Canyon through the unpaved road. Turner reportedly says he will open it if construction of a new road is stopped because it's creating dust and dangerous conditions. Tensions over the road have been high in recent weeks. Turner recently hired security and started charging tolls of $20 per person and $500 per bus. The tribe is publicly speaking out about the situation, saying it's hurting tourism. This week, the ranch owner was arrested for threatening and intimidation of a construction worker. During this month in 2012, the Oglala Sioux Tribe and the National Park Service signed an agreement on the management of the South Unit of Badlands National Park. The area is within the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser, and it's a fine, fine Thursday out there, getting warmer and nicer every day. And in the studio with me, we're very lucky to have Jim Clark from the Juneau World Affairs Council. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us this evening.
Yeah, of course. So quite a big day for the Juneau World Affairs Council.
Well, yeah, it's going to be our last talk of the season. And we're fortunate enough to have Governor Parnell coming this evening to talk about his recent trip to Europe.
Great. And so what, before we kind of dive into what he's talking about tonight, which is, really big, and what is the World Affairs Council? What do you do, and what is your role in the community here?
Well, the Juneau World Affairs Council is a nonprofit organization. We charge nothing for admission to our various programs. We work with our colleague organization in Anchorage, and they'll bring people up, we'll bring people up, and if we bring someone up, we share with them, and they do the same, and we figure out how to get enough sponsorships in order to be able to afford travel and maintenance for them while they're here in Juneau or in Anchorage. So
sure.
We invite people to come and try to interest people around Juneau in world affairs.
So who have been some of your, Governor Parnell is a big guest. Who have been some other of people that you've brought in that you felt have really been really valuable to the Juneau community?
Well, one is our own Peter Kenyon, who started here and at K2 and is now located in Istanbul, Turkey, for public radio. And you hear him often on Morning Edition.
That's right.
And we brought him back here. We had an overflow crowd, of course, for him. We had Mike Peskowitz, who is a very famous author on Japan, who was here as our last speaker in May. And he had written a book called Trading Places that described it was written in the late 1980s when Japan was predominant and people were looking and concerned about Japan buying up Alaska, not Alaska, but American resources and American companies. And he gave a marvelous talk about why all that had changed and what had changed since he'd written his book. So it was a very, very interesting talk. We've had speakers from who are temporarily teaching up as adjunct professors in University of Alaska Fairbanks. So we've had a very, very wide array of speakers, a lot of concentration on the Middle East and issues there. We had a forum on that a couple of years ago. We're going to have a forum on Canada this fall in connection with the University of Alaska Southeast, and we're very excited about that. We had one in March on China. So we've been bringing speakers up on a whole variety of issues of interest around the world.
And so tonight, Governor Parnell is going to speak, like you said. And let's give people the details right up front, and then we can give them the details as far as just time and place and all that.
Well, it's going to be at 5 o'clock this evening in the Hickel Room at Centennial Hall. So we'd urge people to come. We'd like to have a good crowd. The governor will speak for about 40 minutes and take questions after that. And should be a very, very interesting conversation. You know, with the passage of the oil tax legislation, I'm sure that lots of people have questions about that.
Of course.
He went to Europe specifically to find out what was going on in the North Sea. He went to Aberdeen, Scotland, and spent their time there finding out what the impact had been on the North Sea, which, like our North Slope, is a declining oil field.
Mm-hmm.
And there had been a change in the tax rates there, a reduction in tax rates, and he wanted to compare that to the situation in Norway, where they were increasing taxes. They hadn't changed taxes in two decades, and they were increasing taxes, and there was an impact of that, and he was learning of that. So it should be interesting to see how he compares what he found out on his trip to Europe with our situation in Alaska.
Right, right. And so did and how long did he do that trip, and will he be, you know, did he spend time talking to government officials, and how did that work?
He spoke with government officials, and, you know, it's kind of interesting, for example, with Statoil in Norway is owned by the government, so you talk to, mm-hmm. but it's independent in a way. I mean, they've just decided not to do a major project in the Norwegian Arctic because the taxes were raised such that their break-even price was increased by $7 a barrel, and Statoil felt it couldn't go forward. So even though it was the Norwegian government, they're owned by the Norwegian government raised the taxes, Statoil is independent enough to be able to make business judgments about what they'll do and not do. So that, I think, will be interesting to hear about.
To hear what he thinks about that and how that.
The reverse is true. You know, there's been significantly declining production in the North Sea for the United Kingdom, and the Aberdeen, Scotland is the kind of the central focal point of where all the work is done with oil service companies and in the North Sea, and he sat out with public officials there and the oil service industry, and I don't know all the people with whom he spoke,
right.
But we'll find
Quite
out
a few,
more about
yeah.
that tonight.
Yeah. So is this this is completely open to the public and it's free?
Right.
And so what a great service for the community. And I'm just wondering, is this as far as you know, is this one of the first times that he's kind of done an open? You know, you said he's going to do questions. Is this one of the first time he's kind of answered a bunch of questions about this topic?
Well, he's visited us before.
Mm-hmm.
He took a trip to Asia last year and came and spoke to the Juneau World Affairs Council and gave a very good talk about it and what he had learned there and what how those connections would impact Alaska. He talked a lot about trade there, particularly fish and timber and that kind of thing and minerals. And so that was more of a trade type program that he mm-hmm. presented when he came back, and that was the purpose of his trip that time. This time he billed it as specifically to work on oil issues. I think he was going to attend the Fish Expo, and because of a death of one of family member of the Attorney General, he stayed in Anchorage for a memorial service for that young man. So he missed the Fish Expo and just had the oil discussions when he got there.
Sure, sure. So what a great opportunity to get questions answered tonight and learn a lot about his travels, and then how his travels actually impact his thought on what happens here at home.
Exactly. And so I think it'd be very, very interesting. And again, it's at 5:00 in the Hickel Room at Centennial Hall tonight, and public is invited and urged to come.
Great. So just one more question for you. How can people, say, get involved with the World Affairs Council, or where can they get more information?
Well, we'll have a representative there to take anybody's name and like to be a member, and we encourage memberships, and would be very, very happy to have people come and sign up. And we'll probably, after this one, close it down for the summer, but mm-hmm. next fall we'll have a whole spate of new speakers, and we look forward to a very exciting fall program.
Great. And you're a nonprofit organization?
Nonprofit organization.
Is there a website that people can check out?
Yes, jwac.org.
Oh, I like that one.
So it's real simple.
Great. So thank you so much, Mr. Clark, for coming in and talking with us today from the Juneau World Affairs Council. And you can catch Governor Sean Parnell tonight at 5 p.m. That's actually really soon, at Centennial Hall and in the Hickel Room. So, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks again. Thanks for having us this afternoon.
Of course. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser, and I'm very lucky to have right now, actually in full garb. I'm very excited. Yes! This is Delfina here to talk to us on Juneau Afternoon, as well as Courtney Nelson, talking about the goddess life with belly dance and burlesque dance. You do belly dance and burlesque dance instructing?
Yes. Hello, Juneau.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so there's a workshop coming up, right?
Yes. There's a workshop on Saturday morning, and it's at Rockwell upstairs in the ballroom, and it starts at 10 a.m. and goes until 1 p.m., and half of it will be belly dance and half will be burlesque. It'll be a really fun time.
Great.
It's a great workout, and you're going to end up feeling really sassy and confident and like a goddess afterwards.
Oh, fabulous. Fabulous. So what, Delfina, so you're actually, we just talked a little bit about, but you're actually up from down south, and this is your third year here.
This is my third time up in Alaska. It's been a few years since I've been here, though.
That's what I thought, yeah. So what, what keeps bringing you back, and what says, you know, for the people of Juneau, let's really get some burlesque going on here and some belly dancing.
Well, the first time I came here, Alaska has a great mystique and, you know, it has the call of the wild, and it, even though I am wild and I thought I was bringing my own brand of wildness up to Alaska, it ended up casting a spell and making me not want to leave and always come back. And of course, Courtney is a very dear friend of mine, so
okay.
I love coming up and seeing her. But I also love all the women that I end up teaching. And the last time I was up here, I ended up teaching a woman that worked at the Empire, and I ended up doing a makeover reality TV show, and now she's a professional dancer, and she's dancing all over the world. So that can happen to you, Juneau.
Seriously?
Women. Just
wow.
Come to the workshop. You never know what's going to happen.
What will be unleashed.
Right. Seriously. So what is your what's your training in this, and how did you get started?
Well, when I was little, I spent some time in Morocco from 4 to 10. My family lived on a commune there, and so I was exposed to belly dancing. And the first time I saw a belly dancer...
I like the word that you use there, exposed. That's apropos.
I can't help it.
All right.
It's the way I talk.
That's great.
The first time I saw a belly dancer, I was walking through a souk with my family, which is like a medieval, ancient farmer's market, and it has all these twisting, turning roads, like with the dentist who pulls out the teeth right on the spot and has all the teeth laying out. And I saw this belly dancer, and she was all in purple and jingling like Santa Claus, and I fell in love. And my family kept going and actually, lost me for a whole day. It's kind of like the Moroccan version of being lost in a department store. And I didn't feel lost. I was so happy. And when they found me, I told my family that I wanted to marry a belly dancer. I didn't want to be a belly dancer. I wanted to grow up and marry one. So, and then when I moved to New York when I was 17, I started performing in order to make a living, and it was something I could do. But I was taking classes and teaching, and started teaching other dancers how to belly dance, and really kind of combined this this dance that really leads to empowerment. It's more than just a workout. It's more than just self-expression. It really brings out this feminine, something really, makes you feel very, whole and sacred and like a goddess. So,
mm-hmm. So Courtney, having brought up Delfina three times now,
mm-hmm.
So what is kind of your experience in this realm? And it seems like you two are old friends. You ladies are old friends.
Yeah, we've been friends for about 25 years
but
now.
But we're still young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been for a long time. And one of my other friends got into belly dancing and then met Delfina, and then we all started, spending time together. So that's how I originally met her.
Oh, great.
I love to bring her up because it helps me feel like I'm at home again, being from LA myself, and And then I just love spending time with her. And I love to see Juno come alive when she comes to town and see all the dancers and people going outside their comfort zones a little bit and having a good time.
That's great.
Yes, because we're also going to do a show
that
night also at Rockwell. And we started getting some dancers, some local dancers in Juno. I sent them videos of my performance so they could start learning the routine. So they're going to surprise Juno with some local talent.
So we've been getting together at different houses and watching her video, and which was just made for this particular show. And so we're all going to do that. And then I also got a lot of other acts. We have Brett Dillingham, who's going to MC. Snaptastic Theater Troupe is going to be doing some stuff.
Who's that?
It's Robin Gray Davis. Robin Gray Davis, who's an actor.
Snaptastic.
Yeah, Snaptastic. They just happen to be coming through on Saturday, so they've agreed to make an appearance. And we've got an LED hula hooper who's from North Carolina. And we've got some local musicians like Sammy Burroughs and LZ Rocks and C. Scott Fry and Gene Nelson are going to be playing. So it's going to be a really fun variety show.
And oh, that's going to be great. What time is that show at?
It's 8 to 10 at Rockwell on Saturday night. And so we'll also have the workshop in the morning at the same location, and then some of those people might also be inspired to perform. So we're going to leave room for possibly somebody.
A shimmy mob.
Nice. You know, Juno's really game for the mobs, I got to say. So you said that this is like kind of empowerment for women. It makes people feel their inner goddess. Are men allowed?
Men receive the benefits of the dance. And from the last time I was here, I experienced that you know, having all the women come and feel kind of this empowerment and it just makes them feel really good about themselves, and then they get to come to the show and see that
part of that,
and it just makes everyone all happy.
But men are definitely invited to the workshop, right? And to the show.
Yes.
So if they wanted to go to the workshop, they are welcome. And if they want to come to the show, for sure. Yes,
for sure.
They will love the show.
Yes.
You want to steer them towards the show, for sure.
Yes.
Reaping the benefits later.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the belly dance portion, you know, I understand that a little bit more. Then how do you actually teach burlesque?
Well, there's a lot of different styles of burlesque, and I wrote a book on belly dance, and actually burlesque comes from belly dance. There was a famous belly dancer that came to the World's Fair 100 years ago, and her name was Little Egypt, and inspired all these other women to start belly dancing. But since it's, you know, it is an art and it's challenging, they did, you know, just kind of were wiggling their hips, and that was actually the beginning of burlesque.
Interesting.
And then, and it became very popular in New Orleans, and there were so many different clubs in the 50s that they started to have men outside saying, come see the Oyster Girl, and come see the woman coming out of the volcano. And then it became, you got to have a gimmick. And so a lot of people, you know, think of burlesque as having these gimmicks and themes and taking off clothes. But I teach a lot of cabaret style moves. So it's really, really fun and sassy and stylish moves that really give you a great workout. And it's kind of like the Pussycat Dolls. I used to dance with them before they were singers. So it's kind of a little bit more of the moves rather than just taking off clothes. It's actually a workout.
Yeah, I like that, the workout aspect of it.
But it's not a boring workout. I mean, it gives you the same benefits of crunches and squats and all those horrible sounding words. And but you know, you're doing moves that are fun, and everybody knows that when you get dancing, that you can feel like you could dance forever, especially if it's music that you like. And you know, then you're really getting a great cardio workout as well, but you're not feeling like you're the hour will go by so quickly when you're dancing to these moves.
Right, right.
And I guarantee that you will leave with moves that you will want to do on the dance floor or at home.
Are there certain things that ladies should wear to, you know, make themselves feel a little bit sexier, a little sassier?
That's a great question. I recommend, you know, them wearing something that they do feel comfortable in, but not like comfortable as in
not too
sweats.
Comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. Get outside of your uniform is what I call it, you know, so put on something that does make you feel a little bit more sassy, and that could be anything from, you know, sexy jeans to a hat to, you know, some jewelry or something like that. You can wear things that you would wear to maybe yoga, but, you know, if you have any kind of feathers, or if you want to be, you know, daring and wear some, you know, something a little bit more sassy,
yeah,
bring it on. And also for the burlesque, you know, just bring, pack a pair of heels if you have them in your, you know, just bag, just because even though you might not think that you can dance in heels and you're not comfortable in heels, it actually...
Amazing what it does,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, and some of the moves you just feel like, oh, I can't really do this without that, you know, especially like the struts, which ordinary what people call walking, but when you're a burlesque dancer, you strut.
Nice. And so what ages is this for, Courtney?
Anybody can come to the burlesque show. It's age appropriate. Mm-hmm. We don't have anything really scandalous, but it will be fun.
Oh, great.
And it's $20 for the show. We have student discounts, so if you're a student, ask for a student discount at the door. And then the workshop is $35, and it's 3 hours, so yeah.
And they can register online in advance at goddesslife.com.
Okay, goddesslife.com.
Uh-huh, or you can just come to the door, and we have a lot of space because we have the ballroom upstairs, so nobody will be turned away.
Oh, yeah, it's a great space to have it in, too.
Yeah, she'll really feel like showgirl.
Yeah, totally.
And Delfina has also taught a lot of stars how to belly dance, and she's actually been in a Dirty Harry movie because she had an acting career prior to dancing, and she played Jim Carrey's boyfriend.
Girlfriend.
I'm sorry.
Well, there we go. You get starstruck as well. As
yes.
Well.
Yes.
Well, great. So the show, great. So the show is at is Saturday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And that's a $20.
It's not to be missed.
It's
yeah.
not to be missed, right? Because mm-hmm. how entertaining and just fun.
Yeah,
like,
no, it is fun. And burlesque really, it was originally about comedy. You know, they all the great comedians came out. It was the comedy is going to be a big part of our show, and
great.
It's a big part of burlesque.
Yeah, yeah. And so then you also have the workshop Saturday morning, and that starts at
10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Yeah.
And you can register online. Online, and if you want to hit us up with that email address or the web address one more time,
it's at goddesslife.com, and look up workshops.
Fabulous. Well, thanks so much, Courtney Nelson and Delfina. It's a pleasure to have
thanks,
you
thank
both
you.
In the studio. And hit that show. That's going to be some serious good time. And coming up right next, we'll hear Writer's Almanac, and then we'll be right back with some more Juno Afternoon.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, June 6, 2013. It's the birthday of poet Maxine Cumin, born in Philadelphia, 1925. Grew up in an affluent family. Her father owned the largest pawnbroking business in the city. Even though she was Jewish, her parents sent her to a Catholic school because it was so close to her house. She said, "Jesus entered my life casually, but insistently, and some of that sanctified passion has stayed in my bones." She wrote poetry in secret from the time she was a child, and when she was a student at Radcliffe, she finally got the courage up to show her poems to a professor. He handed them back with the comment, "Say it with flowers, but for God's sake, don't try to write poems." And she didn't for a time, until she got serious about it again in her 30s, in the middle of her third pregnancy. She said, "The grit of discontent, the acute misery of early and uninformed motherhood worked under my skin to force out the writer." Cumin is now the author of many poetry collections, including Upcountry, which won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry. On this date in 1949, George Orwell's 1984 was published. 1984 begins with the famous line, "It was a bright cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Orwell wrote most of the novel on the island of Jura in the Scottish Hebrides, grieving the loss of his wife and overwhelmed with the demands on his time that arose from the success of Animal Farm. The weather was terrible. He stayed indoors and wrote. He kept on with the book even as he became more and more ill with tuberculosis, and he died in 1950, less than a year after the book was published. George Orwell, who said, "On the whole, human beings want to be good, but not too good, and not quite all the time." It's the birthday of the father of modern Russian literature, Alexander Pushkin, born in Moscow in 1799, died at the age of 38, but in his brief life, he worked in nearly every literary form. His masterpiece was the verse novel Eugene Onegin, about a man who kills his friend in a duel and loses the woman he loves. Pushkin married a woman who was described at the time as the most beautiful woman in Russia. She had many admirers, including Tsar Nicholas. One of her suitors was so persistent that Pushkin finally challenged him to a pistol duel in 1837. Pushkin died 2 days later. And here's a poem by Maxine Cumin, entitled Watering Trough. Let the end of all bathtubs be this putting out to pasture of four Victorian bow legs anchored in grasses. Let all long-necked browsers come drink from the shallows while faucets grow rusty and porcelain yellows. Where once our nude forebears soaped up in this vessel, come, cows, and come, horses. Bring burdock and thistle, come slaver the scum of timothy and clover on the cast-iron lip that our grandsires climbed over, and let there be always green water for sipping, that muzzles may enter thoughtful and rise dripping. A poem by Maxine Cumin entitled Watering Trough, from her collection Selected Poems, published by Norton and used here by permission on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by the Wall Street Journal, weekend edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. And this is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
And thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser, and in the studio, I'm very, very lucky. I'm really excited to talk to these ladies because it's just really something very cool that they've accomplished. Leah Heifetz and Lucy Squibb, and they're here to talk about a trip south, and I'm sure you've heard about it. But if you haven't, we're going to go over it, of course, and they're going to do a presentation tomorrow of their huge trip. Thanks so much for joining me in the studio.
Of course. Thanks, Shona.
Yeah.
Nice to be here.
Cool. So for those people who are not in the know, which we want to fill people in, what exactly is a trip south? Or because it's still happening, right, for some of people.
Today, right. Yeah. So we spent last summer, we left June 1st, and we started kayaking south from Juneau. And Lucy and I just did the kayak portion, so we went down to Vancouver Island. It's about a three-month trip. And there, a couple of the guys, or five of the guys that were kayaking with us, got on bikes and started biking, and they are now almost to South America.
So that's Max Stanley, Chris Hinckley, Cannon Bosler,
Colin
Flynn, and Andrew Flanzos.
Wow, what a great... So you said it took 3 months for the portion that you were on.
And there were 12 of us on that portion.
Whoa. So, wow. Okay. So who are those other folks that got off on that portion, too, or after that portion?
Mostly Juno kids. Let's see. We had
Mallory Storywell Geiger, Lucas Murley, David McCaslin, and us two.
Yeah. And then Elise, who was Chris Hinckley's girlfriend. She was the only non-Juno kid.
Oh, really? I wonder how she felt about it.
We were strange.
Yeah, probably. Like, you're doing what? And I'm going? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So so in 3 months, and you left from here. You left from Douglas Island with a really cool send-off. And so 3 months, how far was that you traveled?
1,000 or so miles.
It's hard to calculate because we were in our kayaks riding the shoreline exactly. And so, I mean, if you draw a line between here right. and our destination, I think it's like just under 1,000 miles, but
an actual
we
mile,
definitely
something very different.
Took some detours.
Yes.
Right. And so can you give me just, I'm not sure how much you want to give away because I have lots of questions for you, but can you give me kind of a rundown of a typical day, let's say?
Well, breakfast, very important part of the day.
The three things that we did were sleep, eat, and kayak.
So, meals
Build
were
fires.
Very important.
Collect firewood.
Yeah. Start a fire early on. Everyone makes their breakfast.
We kind of had food groups, so people paired together and made food together. It wasn't all, one big goulash in the morning. We had, kind of separate breakfast, but we always like to share, Pack up. Packing the kayaks, everything in, everything out, every day, twice a day.
How long did a typical pack-up take, do you think?
Well,
by the end, it was different for everyone, which was kind of like one of the points that we had difficulties adjusting to at first. But some of us, it took an hour. Some of us, it took
20 minutes.
Some took more. So you have to get up based on what time
you started. Everybody
we wanted
was leaving,
to start
right.
paddling, and right. everything took up much longer than.
The beauty of it is, we were living in comfort. Basically, we could carry so many things in our huge sea kayak, so we could bring tons and tons of things and feel really comfortable. So, whether you had a system down for putting those things back into your kayak and paddling was one thing for one person and different for another person.
Sure, sure. So how many miles a day did you kayak, or did it vary day to day?
It varied a lot. So some days we would go maybe 5, especially in the beginning, getting used to it and getting our endurance up. And some days we would go, 20 to 30 at most.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so as far as, and I'll just go ahead and ask, on tomorrow, so you're doing a slideshow, right? Mm-hmm. And so who, is it the composite pictures, or Leah, did you take most of the photos, or how did this work?
Yeah, tomorrow I'll be showing my pictures. I was pretty much the only one who took pictures, I think. So I'll be showing the pictures, and I think Lucy and maybe a couple other people who kayaked with us last summer will be there, and we'll share stories. And
Leah was amazing. She had her big camera stored it safely in her otter box right between her legs. Not a very comfortable thing to do. pulling it out, taking pictures of everyone and all the beautiful places we were. So it's not an easy thing not to, break a camera or get it sandy or waterlogged
totally.
Or whatever
yeah.
else.
Right. And so how many, after 3 months, how many photos did you actually comb through for tomorrow night?
Well, I'm still working on narrowing it down for tomorrow night, but thousands, 4,000 photos.
Wow.
I think by the end, and videos. And so we'll have the best of the best for tomorrow, I think.
So you'll do video also tomorrow?
I don't think so.
Okay. And then what about some storytelling? Will you kind of guide us through the photos?
Yeah, definitely.
We'll show maps. And, give particular photos from some sites. And, yeah, there'll be stories. We'll share the highs and the lows and the everything in the middle.
Okay, cool. So I just want to hit upon a few highs and lows. Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
So, let's say pick the day that sticks out in your brain on this trip, this three-month kayaking journey that was the absolute the best day you could possibly imagine. It just pops out in your brain.
Gosh.
I know. I was
so
like,
hard.
I can think of a few times. But the best days, looking back on them, I think were not necessarily the best when we were in them, but just like awesome, incredible experiences that might have been kind of scary.
Not comfortable, not particularly easy at times.
So maybe
I agree.
Things that you actually came out of.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Or like started off great. I can remember one day. it was like one of the first days we really felt, or I remember feeling like I was like in kayak shape and, you know, felt really good. It was a beautiful sunny day. We were about to hit Tracy Arm. And it was hot and sunny. The water was glassy. And we decided to keep going because it was such an awesome day and do a moonlight paddle, which didn't work out as well as we had hoped it would.
So what happened? They're giving,
well,
just for the radio audience,
some of you
they're
might
giving
know,
each other looks.
Tracy Arm, you can't camp everywhere. There's particular sites that you can get to. And then it's just straight up vertical walls in other places. So
exactly.
We got going. We're all feeling good. Full moon, beautiful, and we round this corner, and it's just so windy, and the waves get big, and we don't really have a place where we can pull off. And so, you know, we have to get everybody together and make the decision whether we can go another 4 miles, which might take a couple of hours going into the wind and into the waves, or turn around. And
what did you decide?
We figured out, well, Colin pulled out the GPS, and we found this little beach where we could all pull up and sleep until high tide and then get back in our boats and make it to our destination.
Wow. So how many moments like that were truly, you know, like the hairs on the back of your neck stood up because you were frightened or scared for your life?
That was the big one for me. I think I can think of one other time that was pretty scary, but that was a huge learning experience for everyone, I think.
That was pretty early on, right?
Day 7, right? So
really early on.
Or 5 or 7.
Oh, day 5 or 7.
Yeah, so it was at the very beginning. I'd say one of my favorite experiences happened to be the day after my birthday, and we woke up. We planned to get up super early, like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and we were packing our bags and our kayaks up, and it was low tide. We had to swamp through all this mud. We were literally up to our calves in mud, and the bugs were terrible. They were awful. We were all just getting bit to death, and we like racing to get to the water so we'd lose the bugs. And we finally get in, and it's really nice. Paddling along, we hit the afternoon, and the wind picks up. So we decide, okay, we're going to pull out our sails. We're going to go sail. And that's when things start to get a little bit interesting, and we'll have to finish it up tomorrow.
Your cliffhanger for us tomorrow. Nice. I like that. So a trip south wasn't just a time to hang out with your friends and kayak for 3 months. Can you tell us also what the other, I mean, it was that for sure. But what's the other part of it that your kind of plan was with this trip and the whole group?
Well, part of it was we just really wanted to connect with communities and people along the way and see how other people are living in Alaska and British Columbia and beyond. And, you know, we realize that we're unique in the life that we get to share here together. And so we just wanted to, I guess, learn about how other people along the coast are happy and share some of that experience together.
Mm-hmm. See why their place is important to them.
So who did you meet? Did you meet some folks?
Oh, yeah.
We met a lot of incredible, amazing, inspiring people along the way.
Can you give us one standout?
Maybe Soin Tula.
Stuart Marshall.
Artist, kayak, boat builder, instrument builder, extraordinaire. I'll share some photos of him tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And where was he?
Soin Tula is this island just east of Vancouver Island. It's like this Finnish settlement that was supposed to be a utopia. And so he lives there and with his family, and It's a really an incredible place. I've never been anywhere like it.
Wow. Great. And so I have a few more questions, but when you stopped, when you stepped foot on Vancouver Island after this journey, what did that feel like? What was going through your head and heart, I guess?
It was crazy how quickly the time passed, I think. It flew by, and every day was like the best day, and then the next day just got better, I think. I think what was really wild was also, like, for me, I flew back to Juneau from Vancouver Island, mm-hmm. and it was a beautiful sunny day, and I sat in a window seat, and so I flew back to Juneau in 2 hours, the same distance that I had just spent 3 months kayaking.
So that must have been a pretty crazy feeling there.
Really crazy.
Yeah, I had a similar voyage, which for some people may seem like a long time because it was a 3-day ferry ride. But after kayaking for 3 months that same distance, it just seemed like a whirlwind, you know? So getting to replay all those experiences back in my head, coming back up a trip north, mm-hmm. was so different.
Right, right. And so I just have one more question. So there's a group of gentlemen, I do believe, that are right now headed on bike. So what is their ETA of finishing a trip south?
I don't know what their ETA is, but, they've made progress. They're in no rush either.
Oh, great.
I know that they're in the middle of the Caribbean right now on a sailboat, about to be in Colombia.
Great.
So they're about to start their trek south in South America.
Cool. And is there a place that you can catch up with their travels and kind of find out more information?
Yeah, you can check them out at tripsouth.com, and that's their blog. They tell you all about, you can read up on all their new stories, and it's really amazing. Reading through all the experience that they've had so far, and that they're only documenting just part of what's happening.
What's actually going on.
So
right.
I can't wait to see them again and hear all these stories first person.
Cool.
I think what they're doing is so amazing.
Yeah, and what an amazing opportunity for Juneau, actually, because we get to see some photos from your travels from Juneau to Vancouver Island via kayak tomorrow night. Could you give us the time again?
7 p.m. at the Silver Bow Back Room.
That's going to be awesome. Thanks so much, Leah and Lucy, for joining us on Juneau Afternoon, and congratulations on what a great adventure. And I think that's going to be a really cool presentation, so Juneau should check it out.
Thank you, Shona, and
thanks,
hope to
Shona.
See you at the show.
Yeah, thank you. That was super cool. I love listening to the Trip South stuff. That's just, what an amazing thing. So happy to see what they're doing, hear what they're doing, and check them out tomorrow night at the Silver Bow at 7 p.m. And in the studio, lucky as I am, every Thursday afternoon, it really is a treat because I get to know everything, is Nancy DeCherney in the studio. And also we have a special guest.
A special guest because we're starting Food Truck Fridays, and one of our food truck artists is right here. You want to talk?
Mark Wheeler, the new owner of the Casey Shattuck Sherbet Company.
Woo-hoo!
Love that.
And he's brought samples and everything. So we'll enjoy it on the radio while you...
Don't tell Jeff Brown I brought it in the studio. Don't tell him.
No, I won't.
It didn't happen. Did not happen. Okay, but we do have an entirely full week. It's the city that never sleeps or stops or something.
It's
I don't know.
Summertime. We don't sleep,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Who needs it? It's First Friday. So not only are we having Food Truck Friday, but we're starting out with First Friday. You guys have Ron Klein's photos here. They're fabulous.
They are so amazing.
Yes. And you're going to have an opening?
That's right. It's tomorrow.
Yep. And so the Alaska State Museum has The State of Being Displaced, art by Nicholas Galanin. So you can start over. He's going to do his lecture at 7. He is our juror. Our show is, I think, the sixth, I can't remember which number, juried art show that we've done, and he was the juror for it. So he'll be there a little bit to talk about his selections, and you'll get to see all the artwork it's going up right now. It's fabulous. So,
wow.
Yeah, you can start there and get your little guide, and it'll take you all around. You've got Annie Kales is opening with original art by Candace Christie and handmade jewelry by Stacey Gullifson. Aunt Claudia's got some new stuff that she's recently acquired that's going to be open. Chitin is going to be open. They haven't had an opening in a bit. They're right there on Front Street across from Annie Kales. They have art glass knives and new work by Michael Hunter. Juno Artist Gallery has Nell McConaughey. She's got upcycled glass vases. We've got an open house at the Mountainside Wellness, which is up on 4th and Harris, and the Kodiak Coat Company. Bridget's moving south, apparently.
No.
Is that really true?
I don't know. It says here, stop by to see Bridget before she moves south in July. So, And then the canvas has Painting with Numbers, Painting with Fire, works by David Riccio and Luis Kunstada. And I've been seeing previews of this, and it's going to be fabulous. Okay, so.
So are you, is that First Friday?
That's the First Friday thing. And then immediately following or in between or during First Friday from 5:30 to 7 is when we're doing the Food Truck Friday.
Oh, cool.
And that is going to be Thunder Mountain Big Band playing in the Jack.
Oh, wow.
And then there'll be these, for example, this Casey Shattuck ice cream truck will be there.
This is making me excited.
It's homemade rhubarb sherbet made from rhubarb in the flats.
Okay. I'm going to step away from the board while I do this so I don't get in trouble.
Okay, so we'll just talk away here. So there will be a lot of other sorts of things going on. This is our new format for the Concerts in the Park series, is that we will have concerts at the Jack, because we end up there anyway due to the weather. And then there are a lot of people bringing other things. There'll be face painting, and there'll be Bonnie will be there with her oils and vinegar, and there'll be this ice cream, and, it just goes on and on. That's from 5:30 until 7.
Okay, can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
Because I just tried that. I mean, I just tried some sherbet way far away from the board and then pulled back up to the board, of course. And, wow, tell me about that sherbet one more time.
What did you think? What was your sensation?
Well, it's refreshing, and it's actually creamier than a lot of other sherbets I've had, which equals better to me, and really light. So
all of the above.
And it's kind of the essence of rhubarb, isn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure. I was like, yes, it's like the essence of rhubarb, and there's some
maybe it's rhubarb and ice cream.
Yeah.
No, it's a creamy sherbet. It's made with heavy cream and sugar and rhubarb, and that's it.
And that's it.
Okay. So now you have it, folks, and you can get your samples down here on Friday night.
Tomorrow at the Jack.
Yes.
Score.
6:30, there's a reception up at the Baranoff for Senator Begich. 7 p.m., you've already talked about the trip south. They'll be over at the Silver Bow. And Mudd showing at Goldtown all this week. Saturday morning, there's a plant sale at Holy Trinity. We've got, I got to switch over to this other piece of paper here because so many things are happening. We have the second Saturday Farmers and Crafters Market is out at the airport.
Cool.
Delfina's Belly Dance and Burlesque Workshop.
She was here today, we heard about that.
We'll
was awesome.
About that. Family Day at the Lake is from 10 to 3 at Twin Lake.
Oh, is it?
That's something that Rotary sponsors, I think. It's the Seas Cup Admiralty Cove Race, or whatever they do out there. Austin Steamers, live at Goldtown.
That's going to be cool.
Two performances, I believe, on that one. It is the Symphony Sprint 5K Run and 1 Mile Dance Walk. Now, have you seen the dance walk video?
I did see the dance walk video.
And you're going to be there, right?
I will be dance walking in my boat that day in honor of.
Well, dance walking is such fun, and if you've not seen it, you should go there. It's going to be dance walking to Motown because they're getting built up for the Motown concert that's coming next week. But let's see. After that, then you go over to the Jacket from 6 to 9, and Spinning Pig will be there, and they'll have a Motown barbecue and dance. And so it's just be dancing away there. Tom Loker is up at the and Wayne Norland are up at the Tram this summer. They'll be up there on Saturday night. There's a community sunset kayaking out at Saga. That's at 6 p.m.
And it's supposed to be a really nice weekend, so that might actually happen. That might, you know, where you see the sunset. Yeah,
holy cow. At 7:30 p.m., there's a saxophone showcase concert at Northern Light Church, which is free. Boxing Raindrops at the Island Pub from 8 to 10. More on the belly dancing. Let's see, D&R Live at McGivney's, which is what used to be GW Teal's.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's at 8:30, and Austin Steamers again, and Old Time Music with Rumblefish at Rockwell at 9 p.m. On Sunday.
Come on. Is there more?
Yeah, come on. We only made it to Saturday.
I know. We're
amazing.
Through Saturday.
I'm tired just listening.
I know. This is every week. I'm like, whoa.
On Sunday is a really special event from 2. It is the celebration of life for Gene Rogers. This is Through the Arts. A whole bunch of wonderful performers and a celebration of the life of a wonderful community member here in Juneau. So that's at 2 p.m. at the Jack. So I hope to see you all there. Also, at 6:30 out at the airport, Music on the Fly, it'll be the big band playing at the airport.
Oh, they do.
Where? In the baggage claim or upstairs?
Baggage claim.
Oh, cool.
Baggage claim. But the airport is built such that you, whatever's happening in baggage claim, you can kind of hear where you're waiting for stuff. So
very cool.
Very cool. So come
kinda
on.
Like Portland. Up. Portland does that too, right?
Yeah, airport. Portland,
so does
Chicago.
Austin.
I mean, it's just becoming the thing. So we're ahead of the curve here.
Yeah.
We're trying to be anyway. Let's see there. Opportunities on Monday to talk about public transport in case you wanted alternatives to the parking problems and this and that and the other thing. It's family movie over at the Douglas Library. I think that's on the wrong day. Check that
Sunday,
out.
It's Sunday.
Sunday. We're still on Sunday. No, it's on Monday for some reason. So we'll have, but it should be on Sunday. There's more belly dancing. This might be, we might have come to, oh, wait a minute. Wednesday, there's the KXLL Pledge Drive.
That's right, and that's huge.
That's
KXL
huge.
Pledge Drive coming up on Wednesday. So
yes, so
stay tuned for
do that.
That. Yeah.
And I think there's also Juno Community Marching Band rehearsal, so if you want to play in the band.
That's Wednesday night, right?
Mm-hmm. At 7 p.m., and it is, I'm not sure where it is. Oh, the Salvation Army Church.
Yeah.
So that sort of gets us through, but once again, it's real busy and lots of things, fun things to do.
So I had a quick question. Well, I have lots of questions every week. But I had a quick question about where people can get. Can you still get the printout of all of the galleries and First Friday stuff at the Jack?
Yep, we'll have that ready to go on. I mean, people always come in like today and wonder where it is, and we're kind of last minute kind of folks.
Well, people give
you
stuff.
You're busy.
People give you stuff last minute.
Yeah, right. Last minute kind of town, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. 7 minutes late. That's all.
We're 7 minutes late kind of town.
No RSVP. Never. Never RSVP.
I have never heard of that.
Yeah.
What does that mean, actually?
I don't know. See it there.
Right. And so you've got the printout.
We will
there.
Have those at the Jack starting at 4 o'clock so people can come by. And I try to get them put up on the website, but sometimes I don't quite get to that.
Sure, sure. And today is also the very first, or not today, but Friday. Tomorrow's Friday, right?
Yes.
Is also the very first food truck.
This is. We're going to see how this goes.
So who's on board for that?
I. Who knows?
Well, we know you are, Mark, right?
We're building a movement.
There's going to be a bunch of people. A bunch of the food trucks are at the Relay for Life, which we didn't mention, but we should have, I guess. So, but I think it's just one of those things. I know Bonnie's going to be there with her oils and vinegars. I believe that there's a hot dog stand going to be there selling money to raise money or selling hot dogs.
Selling money
to get hot dogs.
I'll take it.
Oh, that'll do.
But they really meant
selling
money
hot
truck.
Dogs to get to Scotland. I was glad they weren't selling haggis, but
they
might
all
do
are.
That. Who knows? Maybe haggis is like hot dogs. But
anyway,
so it'll just, it's sort of a free form, come as you can, enjoy yourself. they'll be dancing because it's big band. We're going to set it up with a dance floor so you can.
Delphina said she was going to dance in front of my sherbet stand to lure in the customers.
Excellent.
And I have a food.
And she will.
I don't have a food truck. I have a food bike.
Oh,
so
really?
I set up a freezer on a bike trailer, and I'm going to tow it behind me and plug it in.
So
that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. We don't need a singing truck. That's cool. That's super cool.
Have some more sherbet.
Yeah. It's a lovely color of pink, too. I would like to add that for the listening audience.
It is.
Things that are lovely colors of pink.
It is a beautiful color of pink.
So I have one more question.
I have one more question,
yes.
Of course. Can you tell us, really quickly, just remind us about Gene Rogers' event on Sunday?
You know, the list of people is, I can't remember everybody that's going to be on it, but it's performances by people who are touched and affected by both Gene and George Rogers. It is just a totally fitting kind
of...
It's at 2 p.m. It's going to go on for about 2 hours.
Great. Wow. Thanks so much, Nancy and Mark.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Shannon.
Spear. The Washington Post reports government agencies are sucking up huge amounts of online data as...